It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, our Pirate Playback, and we have Pirate Football Playback with us right now, Kyle from McGrange Barber. How you doing, Kyle?
What's going on, David?
Doing good. I'm doing really good. We're recording this on Sunday morning, so feeling really good, drinking some coffee. Bringing in now also the other partner in crime, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Good morning, Dave. I'm just glad we're talking about a Pirate victory.
Well, you stole my thunder. I'm drinking the coffee. I was just, you know, I think for to me, when I was actually keeping up with the game, I'll talk about that in just a second. I was thinking about Kyle, and I was saying, if I were at the stadium right now, I would think that Kyle was probably on the verge of some kind of stroke or heart attack, and especially in the fourth quarter, I was thinking about you, Kyle, and worried about your health. And I'm drinking the coffee right now this morning, thinking about. Thank God we're talking about a 37-35 victory. And by the way, guys, I wanted to mention that I have on my Pirate Football Nostalgia Party t-shirt, thanks to the great folks that Kyle works for making the t-shirts. We had our Nostalgia Party back July the 21st, and we soon will be announcing another event. So we'll be talking about that in the coming weeks. I feel confident on that, so we'll be doing that. Wanted to mention that there was a 38-yard Jake Ferdy field goal. It was funny this morning as I was waking up. I was thinking about reflecting a little bit about the game, what I was able to see. My kids actually, full disclosure, I'm going to rely heavily on the guys because they have a play in Williamston where I'm from. It's a community theater. They're doing the Jungle Book. So I had to be daddy yesterday, and I was watching I actually got a chance to watch the very end of the game. So I did get to see the fourth quarter, bits and pieces of the fourth quarter is what I missed the most. But I did get to see the last few minutes. So that's the most important part. But I do know the punting situation. Kyle, I understand you. Were you happy about that punt?
The fourth and one, when we punted the ball with 3:09 to go and the clock was running and we decided to punt the ball on fourth and one. No. I lost my freaking mind. The whole stadium did. We were all booing like crazy. Me in particular, being I'm just extremely emotional. I got really, really upset. Started screaming and yelling. I got so mad. I got to the point where my head started hurting. I got dizzy. My chest started hurting. I had to sit down. I said, Lord Jesus, I'm gonna have a heart attack right here in the thick. Anyway, it all worked out. I still don't like the call, even though it worked out. I think you go for it there. I think Steve Logan said you go for it every time in East Carolina. I do not think it was the right call. I think it was a very risky decision. The defense was playing, you know, extremely well, but one first down, you pretty much have lost the game. But hats off to David Blackwell, bailed Coach Montgomery out. And thankfully we were able to get the ball back and hit a couple passes, and Jake was able to come in and kick the winning field goal. That punt on fourth and one. I tell you what, man, I've never heard that stadium boo that loud in my life. If we'd have lost that game, had ODU went and got a first down or two, and we hadn't gotten the ball back, Montgomery, good God Almighty, I would have felt sorry for him. That might have been it for him because that stadium. If there was 40,000 people there last night, I don't know what the attendance was. 35,000 of them were booing.
It was 35,047, I think.
Okay, well then 34,000 of the 35,000 were booing that play. I mean, it was loud.
It was kind of like I kind of got the feeling that just judging by that, it was here we go again. You know, like we're getting ready to. We're so close to winning the game. Like last week, we had chances in the. In the two previous losses, we had chances to win, and it felt like that could easily be the third loss. And it's like,
well, he did something similar last week, actually. If y'all remember, right, Bubba, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, last week when we punted against South Florida, there was about a minute and a half, 2 minutes more at least left on the clock, and then the field position was more around midfield as opposed to the minus 25 or whatever it was yesterday. So. Yeah, minus 25, minus 30 yesterday. But to be honest with you guys, I didn't get too emotional about that. It didn't shock me that he chose to go about it that way. And really, I didn't, given the way our defense had been playing compared to a lot of the other things in that game, I really didn't have a problem with it. Now, had he gone for it, I would have been okay with that as well. I really would have. Now, there were other things that took place in the game that I didn't necessarily agree with, but that was one that I wasn't too upset about, and I guess I was one of the minority that was not booing.
Well, you know what's funny about that game, looking from, because, again, I was not at the game, but I guess that makes me less of a Pirate, right? But anyway, that for me, in that particular moment, I didn't get the antsy, like, that wasn't a part. Because I feel like finally it's starting to feel like this team. It was funny when I was getting ready and I was reading our good friend Steve Inigo's article, and I kind of laughed because when I woke up this morning, I said, this team found a way to win. And then there was an article in there in Hoist of Colors about the same thing. So I want to give a shout out to Steven, and we were thinking alike there. But finding ways to win games, which is something that they struggled against the A&T game. They struggled against I thought last week they had a good chance to win that game, even though South Florida, no disrespect to them, we could find ourselves easily right now 3-1 or certainly undefeated. So anyway, the good news is we're 2-2 going in there, and I want to mention the 2 points to you guys, and I want to get your thoughts. Number one is that could have easily been a end of Mo era kind of thing. We've got right now 7 games left, potentially 8, and that could have been, you basically right now have to win half your games to make a bowl right now. So the back, just hear me out on this. I hate the term, I got a few points to make. I hate the term ugly win. That's not an ugly win. That's a great win, 37-35. There's people out there that are really dumb that don't know anything about football that are saying what happened to the defense when that's a game that ODU just beat Virginia Tech last week. Oh, by the way.
If you think the defense was the problem yesterday, you should stop watching football.
Yeah, exactly. And then I wanted to mention to you guys that I give Montgomery a lot of credit on the recruiting trail. You know, you guys always hear me talk about, I feel like he's done that's one of the strengths of Montgomery is his recruiting. And this whole adage, if you don't think, let me just say this to folks that are so anti-special teams and they just want to give all the scholarships to the to like the quarterbacks, or you know, they want to get the skill players. Let me just tell you how important special teams are. We had a blocked extra point yesterday, okay? Our punter, I'm not so sure about. There's a lot of question marks in special teams right now. And let me just say that Verity is one of the – he's perfect now, 8 for 8, guys. And you know what? You got to give Montgomery credit. He gave the dude a scholarship, and he has really been great. That's been one of the steady, secure things in the Montgomery area is Verity's. He's been with us now 2 years. Verity has been tremendous, and I just have to say that my tip my hat to him, not because he's made the 38-yard field goal yesterday. He has been perfect this year, 8 for 8. So every couple of years, I'm not saying waste a whole bunch of scholarships, but, I mean, can't you get at least don't do this thing, walk on. We're at East Carolina University. We're ECU, the Pirates. We need to have quality people in special teams. Special, you know, Ruffin always talked about offense, defense, and special teams, and that was one of the things I was going to talk about. We need to, if we're going to be big boy football and if we're going to be Power 5, you know, Power 6 football, then we need to make sure every couple of years, I'm not saying waste a whole bunch of scholarships. Don't misunderstand me. But we need to make sure we have quality people like Verity. I want to tip my hat to Montgomery on and his
a lot of coaches, even at the so-called Power 5 level, don't get scholarships to kickers. That's a common practice. Logan always had a policy after the situation we got in the late 90s where we didn't have a field goal kicker, where he started giving his field goal kicker scholarship, a la Kevin Miller. I agree with you. I think you can get by with it on a punter.
One punter and one kicker.
Well,
I think
you can get by with it on a punter without doing that. Montgomery's taking an interesting approach to punters. He's taking transfers at the punter. And one we got this year, I don't know about. But I agree with you on field goal kickers. That's such an important aspect of the game. It's points. Anytime you got a guy right. whose sole job, well, you may be kicking off for you too. But his main responsibility is going to be to get you points, either 1 point or 3 points. Right. Yeah, you need to get the best guy you can at doing that. And you definitely. I'm with you on giving the field goal kicker a scholarship.
And Bubba, I want to mention to you something that I noticed. And again, I'm relying heavily on both of y'all because I got to see the game and listen to the game. I'm a nerd. I love Jeff Charles and all the inside. I listen to the game and I watch the game on ESPN Plus. And so between both broadcasts, and I know people probably think that's crazy, but I do because it gives you a different feel of what people are saying. But anyway, I noticed watching on my phone on ESPN Plus how one of the things I've been disappointed with special teams has been that, especially on like punt returns, there is no punt returns. So I'm hoping that, or very little. I want to get your take, Bubba, and then Kyle on that.
Yeah, so you talked about how solid Jake Verity's been, but then last week, after being solid the first two games, our punt team started showing some red flags as far as our punt team. We had a punt blocked, and John Young started struggling there. And then yesterday, I noticed something that was kind of unique. I know the nose down drop has become pretty commonplace as far as being employed when you're trying to down the ball inside the 10-yard line and get the end over end kick. But we were using it like on the minus 20, and which was kind of interesting to me. So it'll be interesting to see where things go as far as our punt team, our kickoff return, or our kickoff returns, excuse me, have not been good, and that continued yesterday.
Agony!
I was going to say, we certainly haven't decided to take advantage of the new rule, and I think maybe one time we ran it back to the 24, but we failed to get back to the 20 multiple times yesterday, and so we're steadily losing anywhere from like 5 to 10 yards there.
Tell Coach Montgomery about that new rule. If you fair catch it, you know, inside the 25-yard line, you don't even have to be in the end zone at the 5, 10, whatever. You get it at the 25. Will somebody please let Coach Montgomery know about that?
No,
that's frustrating for me because I don't want to get rid of kickoffs, but I was like, hey, they got a rule, take advantage of it. And we talked about that a week ago, and here we are again. You know, it's like, and sometimes I think that maybe that's one of the things, even though the coaches know it, maybe they need to stress that more and more and more.
I think they're telling the players the obvious, the opposite. I think they're telling them to go out there and try to make a play, which I think there's a time for that. I think if you're down in a game, you need to create momentum.
Right.
Or you're down big, or they just hit a big play. Now you think you got a kickoff man who wants to try to answer. But most of the time, man, you're better off just knowing you're going to get it at the 25 every drive. And you know going into that drive, every drive we're going to get it at the 25. You know exactly how many yards you're going to have to go to get in the end zone every time.
That's right. And another thing, too, is that I wanted to mention to you guys is with this game was razor thin close between being 2-2 and 1-3. And if you're 1-3, I wanted to make a point to you guys. I thought about this morning, so I want to go ahead and say it before I forget too, is if you think about it, this is kind of like at the point with having 7 games, potentially 8 games. We don't know that yet. We're going to talk about that, another thing we've been hearing. So I want to talk about that particular statement in just a little bit, but if you look at it right now, think of this like a tournament, and you just hear me out on this, okay? Last night, for those people that think it's an ugly win or the defense didn't play great, this right now is a team learning how to win. This is a team right now. This is called survive and advance, like a tournament. And what the team did last night showed me they have a lot of grit. They have a lot of heart. They could have easily gone the A&T route like we had the first game of the year, just let it slip away, or the last week, which we actually, I felt like, played a really good South Florida team, but it was a conference game that we could have stolen from them. The good news is they had a tough game against ODU. We know ODU is a good team, as they put up a unbelievable win against Virginia Tech last week. So I think survive in advance. So what you have now, guys, that I look at it like, let's look at this regular season like a tournament. And, you know, you can't – in other words, my point is our back is against the wall. You pretty much have to win at least every other game or to have a chance at six wins, right?
Yeah. To get to six wins, a couple things will have to happen. One, we're going to have to start getting more consistent quarterback play. The problem, I think Reed could be a good quarterback. The problem is, I think with Reed right now, with his learning curve, is the running game. His little fake on those zone read runs where he acts like he's going to pull it, nobody's buying that. And the couple times he did pull it yesterday, oh my God, I've seen little girls, you know, take hits better than he did. He like went down like in the fetal position. So that's a problem. I think if it was like an air raid, I think Reed could excel in time. So we need to do something different with the running game. I think playing Penix more would probably help him a lot. And then with Holton, it is clear that they've just practiced a package with him. And when they took Reed out and were trying to let Holton run the entire offense and mix in some passing, he looked like he hadn't practiced a bit of the passing game. Unless Holton can suddenly in season learn the passing offense, Reed's going to be our quarterback. Unless you go to Kingsley. So the quarterback situation is a worry to me because you got one guy that takes away the ability to run, and then you got the other guy that takes away the ability to pass that. And we need to be able to do both with this offense. And then two, Tony Peterson or Montgomery has just got to look at themselves in the mirror, look at the playbook, get rid of some things, maybe add some things. And guys, I don't know, Bubba, if you agree with this, but I don't think we use our personnel right a lot of the times.
I notice what you're talking about. I mean, you think about back at the beginning of that game yesterday, the first quarter, we showed a ton of different personnel groupings and a ton of different formations. And I thought we did that pretty well. But I do agree with you that Darius Penix and Hassan Howell have to get more touches. Right now, I'm certainly not down on Anthony Scott by any means. But I agree with you, Kyle. And I was talking to former Pirate running back Brandon Simmons yesterday. And I know he believes that Darius Penix is our best back at this point. And so I think Darius, I'd like to see him get more than, I guess he had maybe five or six rushes. We'll go over the stats later on, but something like that. And then he touched the ball in the passing game three or four times as well. And getting the ball to Darius Penix with the head of steam in the flat, that's a dangerous thing for the defense.
Well, Darius, what I've noticed he does is if people think he's slow, he's not slow.
No, it may take a little bit to get that head of steam and get accelerated. He may not accelerate as quickly, but I mean, for a big boy, 225, 230 pounds, Darius Penix a load.
Talk about acceleration. It's not acceleration, but he sees the hole he wants to go through and he goes through it. He hits it. There's no dancing. There's no hesitation. We create our offensive lines better this year. It's nowhere near as good as it should be, but it is better this year. And they do create run lanes, but they close fast. And you would think, therefore, you would need a feedback. But what Penix does is when he sees that hole, he goes just like that. He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't think about it. He sees a hole and he hits it. And I like him a lot. And I do think he's our best back. And I'm not saying don't put in Ant Scott or don't put in Asin Howe. But I would use Penix as our primary back. He needs to be starting. And then put Scott in to relieve him and use Hassan Howell, you know, in certain situations. As fast as Howell is, you know, you thought about using Penix in the passing game, Bubba. I'd love to see us use Howell in the passing game more.
Yeah, both.
I totally agree.
Unless he just maybe doesn't have good hands. I mean, that's always a possibility.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that you look at, and we'll talk more about this on next Thursday, next week for our Pirate Preview. We've got Temple coming up, guys. And Kyle, you made, I'll give you credit, as I always do, or if it was Bubba. But I know, Kyle, we talked about last week how important you said the next 2 weeks are. You and I had talked about that, and Bubba, the three of us, before the podcast last week for the Pirate Playback. But this particular week was so huge. We were so close, flirting with disaster like Molly Hatchet. And then we get the win, so you survive in advance. But now we've got to go on the road and a huge game against Temple. Well, Temple has owned us for a number of years now, and it's time to get a win back for them, especially the 2014 game. We go up there and that rain and the fumbles, it was just a disastrous kind of day. It's time to they need some payback, don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I'd love to beat Temple. That of all the teams in the conference, besides maybe UCF and Memphis, the one I'd like to beat the most is Temple. I do think Temple, since their first two games, they lost to Nova, and then they lost to Buffalo, which really wasn't a bad loss in hindsight. Buffalo's only lost one game, and that was yesterday. They lost a good Army team, but you lose to Villanova and Buffalo, you think, well, maybe Temple's down this year. They turn around and beat the dog mess out of Maryland, who had beat Texas. Then they handled Tulsa, and then yesterday they gave Boston College a game. They lost by 10 up at Chestnut Hill. So they played well the last 3 weeks. I think we're gonna have our hands full up there, but I do think we could win it. My fear with them is, you know, they typically play pretty good defense, and how our quarterback situation is gonna be in that game. How is Reed gonna handle the inevitable pressure they're gonna get on him? You know, so that's my fear with that game. I'm sure our defense will keep Temple's offense within check, but it'd be a nice one to win. It may be asking a little much. On the road in Philly, but I tell you what, I sure would like to win it. I do think we'll have a chance. But it was good to get the win yesterday over Old Dominion to get to 2-2. But October, guys, not to get too far ahead because this is the rewind, but October ain't going to be an easy month. You got Temple, then after Temple was at Houston, and then you got UCF, and then what, Memphis? Is that the order?
Well, Memphis is going to be November. I want to mention while we have a chance that October 27th game, what we're hearing.
Overall, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, let's talk about that while we have a chance, because I know that in my mind I'm not awake on a Sunday morning. So I drink coffee. I've got some caffeine in me. Let's talk about October 27th before we get into the stats, because I want to do that, and we've got a big interview as well that we're going to play. From our Pirate Nostalgia Party for a great player against ODU. So I'm hearing, so let me just say that, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm hearing that we're trying really hard not to play the October 27th game. In other words, schedule a game in the bye week. My understanding is Nebraska wanted us, but they didn't want to give us a lot of money to go on the road, which was a smart decision by ECU not to schedule Nebraska if they're not going to give us.
I don't know if it was or not. Nebraska sucks.
Well, the way this team is playing, now you want to talk about, when I hear about, when people talk about it's overused, but when you talk about a program win, can you imagine if Montgomery gets a road win against Nebraska?
I mean, that would have been incredible, but it's not, you know, we're not playing them. But
yeah, we've been critical of Montgomery, but when he comes up big, we actually give him credit. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
For people that say we're negative Nellies, tough but fair. And I've been on recruiting and different things. We've actually, especially kids in Eastern North Carolina, I think it turned the tide with Holton Ahlers getting him. But we've been big on that. But anyway, not to get too off on a sidebar, I feel like, guys, with October 27th, it's looking like when you have the Murderers Row schedule as far as our conference, like Kyle was just talking about, next week you've got Temple. Then you have Houston and Central Florida back-to-back home games. Those are three tough wins. I wish that would be nice. Three tough conference games. and you have the bye week, and then you have Memphis at home. Those, that stretch right there is the heart of the season when it comes to conference schedules, right, Bubba?
Yeah, it is. I was going to say, I don't blame us for not trying to schedule a game in that October 27th open week slot, because, I mean, you're right in the, like you said, the heart of, you got Temple, Houston, UCF, and then after the open date you have Memphis. So definitely the most difficult stretch of the season, and odds are we certainly want that open date to potentially to heal some wounds and that sort of thing.
Right, and here's another thing. I was going to mention, Kyle, when once an FCS opponent, October 27th. It looks like right now, I just want to tell Pirate fans, what I'm hearing is that what they're going to try to do is it'll be an away game. I don't know if it'll be a neutral site or a different team, but this is interesting. Guess what team that I'm hearing, and notice I said hearing, that wants to play us. You won't believe, you guys won't believe, we need
I believe it. News.
I'm hearing that NC State wants to schedule us for the first week of December if, notice, both what this is contingent upon is that we have, with Dave Hart and Lee Workman and Scotty Montgomery are working together, at my understanding, and they, what it is that they want to have a plan. Can you believe that? we haven't had that in 5 years, but they want to have a plan in place so that, let's say hypothetically, that the team that we're playing is not in a conference championship game and we're not in a conference championship game in the American, then we would play the December 1st, the very first game in December, we would play the makeup game, the 12th game. It's going to depend a lot on, I guess, if we're close to six wins, or certainly if we make the championship game or not. But that would probably say that we'd have six wins, right? So it wouldn't matter, but we would be going to a different bowl. But it looks like right now that the team that I'm hearing, one of the teams, they're going after multiple teams, but I know Marshall has a game, South Carolina has a game, NC State. But playing NC State would be great, guys, because, Kyle, you brought up a great point. I want to throw it to you. When you and I were talking about this a few days ago, this would actually be great leverage for NC State, right?
Well, I mean, in terms of getting them to play us more games down the road if we go there this year, yes. There's a couple of things that's going to have to happen. With NC State, if we're going to play them. One, they're not going to, as you mentioned, they can't be playing for the ACC Championship. We can't be playing for the American Championship, okay? Most of those things are likely to happen. Also, NC State's going to have to do one of two things. They're going to have to move the game next year to Greenville if we're going to go to Raleigh this year, or they're going to have to pay us a nice price tag to buy a game with East Carolina, because if they're not going to give us another home date, if they're not going to move next year's game to Greenville or either give us a home game a couple years from now, then they're going to be buying a game, and we need to charge them as such. So they're either going to have to cough up some money if we're going to Raleigh, or they're going to have to give us, they're going to have to move next year's game to Greenville or give us a home game down the line.
Well, here's another thing you mentioned that was great too. I want to mention is that what we could do is we could actually have the, if you had the, here's what would be nice. This will be a nice case. This is a totally nice case scenario that Kyle mentioned to me. So you have the game in Raleigh this year, right? And you have moved the game to Greenville next year, and then you could actually take your Virginia Tech home game that you had for next year, for 2019, and give them the game that we owe them back. And next then that year. would be a perfect case scenario, right?
Yeah, and you could do that if State wants us to come there this year and they're willing to move the game to Greenville next year. Then you move the game with Virginia Tech to Blacksburg next year, and everybody's happy. But we may be overcomplicating this, because if the Hokies aren't in the ACC title game, and they may be, they beat Duke yesterday in the Coastal. Yep. But if the Hokies aren't in the ACC title game, and that's who we're going to end up playing, we'll just make up the game with Virginia Tech October 1st. Now,
December 1st.
Yeah, what did I say? October 1st?
October,
December 1st.
Yeah.
Now, here's my thought process on all this. I make a couple of plans. I make a plan, with Virginia Tech, hey, we're going to play you guys if you're not in the conference championship. We're going to make up the game December 1st. And then I call State and say, hey, look, this is what we require. If we can't play Tech, we will go play you guys if you aren't in the conference championship, but we require XYZ. And then I tell them both, and I make a plan C. I get Hampton, for example, on the phone, who needs a makeup game. We got a relationship with Coach Prunty there. And I tell State and Virginia Tech, both of them guys, by the middle of November, if we're sitting there with five wins, and we may need a win number six to get to a bowl, we're not playing either one of you guys. We're playing Hampton. And I tell Hampton the same situation. Save the date. And, and that's all contingent on all of them. If somebody doesn't want to work with us, if they want to go ahead and move forward, I don't think NC State or Virginia Tech, either one, will mind waiting until the middle of November, because I know both of them are planning on, you know, competing for a conference championship. So I don't think it'll be a problem getting them to wait. And I don't know how many other teams are going to be beating down Hampton at the door, but that's what I do. I actually make three plans, and then depending on the situation, at the end of the season, that's what I do. I'm definitely playing a game December 1st, but depending on the record, if we got six wins already, you go play Virginia Tech, go play NC State. Who cares? I mean, at that point, it's a bonus. You get a chance to pull off an upset. If not, you're still going to a bowl. If you're sitting there with five wins, I play Hampton. And if we got less than five, three or four wins, and I don't give a damn what we do at that point. Do what you want.
What do you think, Bubba?
Yeah, I was going to say, I would certainly like that matchup with NC State. And I think what Kyle was saying is I think he's underestimating the power of the psychological disadvantage that NC State continuously professes that they're at when they play this game. But, yeah, I found that interesting what you said as far as them wanting to play the game, because I'm sure they've lost, obviously, three games in a row in the series. And they
have you watched them play this year?
Well, right, and they think that it's a prime opportunity to stop that streak and beat the Pirates. So of course they want to play, but
and you know that here's the thing too is that that may be the opening that we need to schedule. Another thing to mention is that, Kyle, is that we say, okay, we give you 2018, right, the makeup game. But you're going to have to add more games down the line, wouldn't that? That's what came to mind first.
Yeah, Bella. I mentioned that. I said if they don't want to move the game here next year, then you give us a date down the road. You go ahead and schedule, whatever 2020. I have to look at our schedule and their schedule, but whenever we both have an open date, you go ahead and schedule a game in Greenville, and it gets announced when this is announced. But with that said, again, I think we may be all overthinking this. If Virginia Tech doesn't make the ACC title game, that's who we're playing December 1st. And while they did beat Duke yesterday, which kind of puts them in the driver's seat in the Coastal,
Miami is the team to beat in the Coastal. So
well, they beat Duke yesterday, so that puts them in the driver's seat in the Coastal, but they still have to play Miami. So so it's going to be between the Hokies and the Canes. With being they beat Duke, and Duke was a contender in the Coastal. So it's between the Hokies and the Canes. They play later this year. So I don't know. Where's that game at, Bubba? You probably know if that game's in Blacksburg or in Miami.
I think it's in Blacksburg. That's why I was actually checking. Yeah.
Okay. So if that's important, because if the Canes beat Miami up there, then we would be playing Virginia Tech, if Virginia's most likely, because they wouldn't be in the title game. But if Virginia Tech beats Miami at home, unless they blow another game on the road or something like that, then they'd be in the ACC title game. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I definitely think they have a chance to make the ACC title game, which means that you could have the opportunity to play NC State or somebody else. But there's also a chance that that they could lose to Miami in Blacksburg, and then we'd be playing the Huskies.
Yeah, Miami goes to Blacksburg on November 17th.
Yeah, see, there you go. That's the middle of November. That's when I think that's when these decisions are going to be made. I don't think Virginia Tech's going to know if they're in the title game until the end.
I was just going to say that they may be where they lose. They might stump their toe a couple times too. So you just don't know.
Well, if they stump their toe one time, they're undefeated in the ACC. So if they stump their toe one time, they still would have the chance to win the division going into that Miami game, because they would have a chance to beat Miami and then win the head to head. Then they would have the same amount of losses but one head to head. So that probably won't be decided until then. And the same with NC State. NC State's undefeated. And, you know, even if they lose to Clemson, they're not going to say, all right, we've lost the division. They're going to wait and see if Clemson happens to lose two down the stretch. And I don't know how bad Clemson's quarterback's hurt, but, you know, State could definitely, if Clemson doesn't have their quarterback for a while, when do they play? Bubba, do you happen to know when Clemson plays State?
I was going to say that the ACC race certainly got a lot more interesting with Clemson's quarterback situation, depending on the health of Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and wouldn't y'all say State would be in the Atlantic would be the top contender behind Clemson?
Yes. Yeah, they played very well. They beat Virginia yesterday, and they're looking really good. And, you know, I want to do a sidebar while Bubba's looking, is that our good friend Steve and Igo brought up the point of Kelly Bryant maybe a transfer possibility. I don't think it's a good idea. I'll just say that. I know Igo and I are going to disagree on that. Love you, Steven, very much. But I don't think bringing Kelly Bryant in from Clemson, being he wants to leave, how ironic is it that he decides to leave on Wednesday and then that Lawrence gets hurt on yesterday?
Yeah, same thing happened in Nebraska earlier this year. They lost their quarterback and their backup had transferred, and now they're terrible. That's a shame. And these kids have got to quit being so impatient.
So do the fans.
Well, I don't know about that. I guess Bryant felt disrespected, and I can understand it. He's won a lot of games at Clemson, and they're going with the freshman now. So I can understand that. That one I can actually understand a little bit, because you take a guy who's won a lot of games, and then you put him on the bench in favor of a freshman.
And that's the whole point, is that there's no question that Lawrence deserves playing time because he's so good.
Sure.
But at the same time, Kelly Bryant, you can make two quarterbacks work. You can make it work. And Clemson, Dabo is I'm a huge fan of him and a huge coach in college football. But I didn't agree with that decision. So, and, you know, Clemson.
Yeah, but, you know, Kelly would be starting right now if Eddie stayed. So there's a couple of arguments that can be made there, but I don't know. I understand where Bryant felt disrespected. I do. But as far as him coming to East Carolina, I guess it depends on how things play out with the quarterbacks this year. If Heron, you know, emerges as the season goes, or Baylor shows that he's starting to learn the passing offense, then you don't want to bring in a transfer. But if we're struggling with a quarterback all season, if we're struggling with a quarterback most all season, most likely Montgomery won't be here, which most likely Kelly Bryant wouldn't be coming. So it's kind of a moot point. If Breed or Ehlers starts performing well on all aspects of the game, then you don't need Kelly Bryant, but that means Montgomery's staying. If either one of them improves as the season goes, then most likely Montgomery's not going to win enough games to keep his job. And from what I understand, that's the reason Kelly Bryant's rumored to be coming here, is because of his relationship with Scotty Montgomery, correct?
Right. Yeah, because he recruited Kelly Bryant, so before he would have been at Duke. So while he was at Duke, he has a great relationship with Kelly Bryant. And I'm not saying, let me make it very clear, I'm not saying Kelly Bryant is like what we've had before in grad transfers. He would be, I think he would be an excellent addition for East Carolina, and you can't turn down his talent and his leadership. He's won a ton of games, huge games. So don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the guy's not talented. Or
what you're saying is that we got kids that have been in the system and they deserve a chance to play.
Right, correct. And I'm not, I just don't want to, my thing is with the guys we have, it comes down to, and you know, I said it last week a lot, but it comes down to experience. I think they have talent. It's one of the criticisms we've had of Montgomery is, let's be very, very clear here, one of the criticisms we've had of Montgomery is player development. And I think we're starting to get that now with the coaching staff. We've been very positive about the coaching staff, or you, me, and Bubba across the board, have said this is the best coaching staff we've had in 3 years under Montgomery. And so now we finally have, I think, a chance that they're starting to win games now. They, even though it's early in the season, I just feel like it's this coaching staff, as far as maybe Montgomery, I feel like maybe Peterson and Games panic, and I just don't want it to be like a panic situation, like we're desperate. Maybe we won't know until November, but when you're 2-2, I don't think you should panic, especially when it may be the toughest part of the season. But these guys are really playing with a lot of heart. They're playing for Montgomery now. We're getting the recruiting class coming in next year. The next couple of years, we're doing really well with that. So I think when it's all said and done, I think it's too early to maybe you talk to Kelly, but at the same time, what do you think about Ehlers? I mean, you know, you've got Ehlers, you've got Effetti, and you've got Herring, three homegrown recruited guys in. And when you have Montgomery saying again this past week about recruiting, well, if you recruited those guys and those are your quote-unquote guys, then I know Herring's not. He's actually Ruff's guy. But you've got two out of the three guys. He actually, in fair to Montgomery, he actually recruited Herring as well for Duke. But being a local Millbrook talent in Raleigh, they're close to Duke. But all three guys are talented guys that would deserve a chance, and I don't think you should give up on them and bring in Kelly Bryant when he would only be there for 1 year, right? So you're basically
– Well, here's an interesting thought, David. And let's say Reed Herring, let's say that he doesn't show much progress this year. Okay, now let's hope that doesn't happen, but let's say that's the case. And let's say, well, Holton's our future. Well, you could bring in Kelly Bryant and redshirt Holton next year, because at this point, Holton's not going to be redshirted, I wouldn't think. So there's a thought. I think it's contingent on how Reed develops, because if Reed doesn't show, I think Reed's got a chance. I think Reed's got an upside. If Reed develops, then I would imagine both sides would probably go, Bryant's going to go somewhere he knows he's going to play, and if Reed ends up having a good year, he's probably not going to come here. But if Reed struggles all year, you could bring in Kelly Bryant and redshirt Holton next year and let him learn more of the passing offense, get Kelly for 1 year, and then you bring Holton in as the starting quarterback the following year.
But it all comes down to winning six games, too. So
yes, absolutely. It's contingent. Well, I think you may save his job with five, but six sure as hell would make me feel a lot better. But, you know, all this talk about quarterbacks and Reed Herring and Kelly Bryant and Holton Ehlers, there was a quarterback we had here several years ago by the name of Shane Carden. That was a hell of a quarterback. And don't we have an interview with him?
We do. And let me just say, before we get started that interview, we recorded this back in July for the Nostalgia Party. And Shane is actually on, let's give them credit, on Pirate Radio every Monday afternoon at the 5 o'clock hour. And he normally wouldn't come on because in season, we wanted to play this interview. And let me just be very clear, we recorded this back in July so we won't get him in trouble for Pirate Radio. But let's go to that interview with Shane. We did that. Let's do that right now. Next up is a huge player that we had here at East Carolina. He's in my Hall of Fame and a future Hall of Famer for East Carolina University for the athletics program. He needs no introduction. The captain, Shane Carden, joins us now. And how are you, man? Appreciate you coming on tonight.
I'm doing good. I appreciate you guys having me.
A huge honor as we're trying to honor Pirate players through different eras, and certainly yours, a lot of happy times. And we wanted to have you on tonight to reflect on that. It's kind of, we're getting ready for another football season, and I know as bad as you've won as many games, I know you want the 2018 to be a big year. I wanted to talk about your career and get your overall thoughts, what it was like to play for the Pirates for East Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, for me to get there, a lot of things had to happen, and it was kind of out of luck, and I got super lucky, obviously, to end up East Carolina. you know, from who had to leave coaching wise to who showed up, and kind of the connections that we had from Texas, you know, between me and Russ. You know, I was planning on going to a small school in Texas, and then Ruff got there, and I talked to Riley a couple times, sent him some highlight film, and we talked, and I knew B.J. Simmons, who they had kind of coached for, coached back at Texas Tech, and, you know, just through some crazy happenings, I ended up at East Carolina, and, you know, I couldn't have think of another school that I would rather have ended up at, and I couldn't have think of a better situation that ended up happening when I was there.
It's amazing to think. I think if my memory serves me right, I hope it's still good, my memory. You actually got an offer from, was it Sam Houston State?
So it was Stephen F. Austin.
And okay, then, Stephen F. Austin, sorry.
Wow, there. Yeah. I mean, they're pretty similar as far as, I mean, they're close in distance. They're kind of right. They're big time rivals. And I talked to Sam Houston State as well. And they actually written me, or if I had some fans from Sam Houston State write me after I was redshirted and some things happened. So I still had a lot of connections there. And, actually one of, a kid I played with in high school, his dad was a baseball coach there at the time. So there's a lot of connections throughout those schools. And, you know, luckily I had a good support, around me that just kind of kept me focused on what I wanted to do, and I stuck it out kind of through 2 years of scout team, and ended up getting my shot that third year at South Carolina. And after that, you know, I never left the field.
I want to ask you about, I'm a huge fan of first one coach. I want to mention Coach Ruffin McNeil. What does he mean to you? He's very special to me. I've met him once personally, but I love what he did for the program. I want to get your thoughts here as we're reflecting back tonight with the Pirate Football Nostalgia Party.
Yeah, I mean, Ruff means everything to me. I mean, as we sit here talking, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. I wouldn't have the connections, the relationships I have at East Carolina without Ruff. If he didn't go there, I wouldn't be there. So at the end of the day, I owe everything to Ruff. And I love that man, and he treated me the best I could ask for, even when I was a redshirt freshman getting my butt kicked on scout team. You know, he talked to me, he knew my name, and, you know, I think it seems to be getting more rare and rare with some of the coaches and kind of what's been going on as you know, coaches get a job offer here and leave this and do that. And at the end of the day, it's a business, and he knew that, but he, you know, he loved us. And not to say he didn't, you know, get in our faces when we needed to. Me and him would, you know, he'd come at me sometimes when I wasn't doing what I needed to be. And, you know, he was, like I said, he's a guy between him and Riley. I mean, I owe everything to those guys.
Wanted to ask you about, with not only Coach Ruff, but Lincoln Riley, what a job he's doing at Oklahoma. And now Ruff is with him. I've always followed the program at Oklahoma because it's a brand name program. What do you think about, talk about your time with your relationship being with the offensive coordinator with Lincoln Riley and yourself being the star quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't always pretty. I mean, I know early on, I mean, he was a very tough coach. I mean, a very tough coach. And it was kind of that whole thing of like, you know, nothing's ever good enough. And at the time, being as young as I was, I mean, it was frustrating. You know, you're like doing this and you finally do something good on scout team, or we had, you know, small scrimmages every Thursday night. We called it Thursday night football, and we'd have a few good plays, and, you know, we'd end up the whole team doing up downs, like 100 up downs, the offenses after the scrimmage. You know, we're all pissed off, yelling at Riley. But I mean, if you look at it, I mean, the first 2 years we were right around there, right around that 500. And then what Riley kind of instilled with that younger group is kind of what built up and kind of created the culture that we had for those very successful years we had. And that was rough, and that was Riley being hard on the younger guys and saying nothing's ever good enough. And yeah, so we have won more games. Absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of programs look back and a lot of people look back, but at the same time, we accomplished a lot. And I don't think a few losses ever takes back, you know, for what we accomplished. And again, I think that's because Lincoln and Russ kind of instilled this culture and this atmosphere of we got to be tougher. We're going to be playing bigger schools. We're going to be playing probably better athletes. And, you know, nothing's going to be ever good enough. So let's just keep grinding and be better.
I know, Shane, one of the things that as Pirates, I think we have the perfect, not only geography-wise and the history of North Carolina, but we also have the perfect mascot, Pirates. We're kind of there's a lot of kids that come in here with chips on their shoulders. I mean, you look at the athlete that you are. I just can't. It's still with you and Justin. It's still that baffles me that you guys wouldn't have more offers. Not only that, but Division I offers. But anyway, what does it mean to be? I wanted to ask you this, being the captain of the team. What does it mean to be a Pirate to you?
I mean, I think it's kind of just what I was just saying. I mean, nothing's ever good enough, and you're never going to have the best stuff. You're never going to be in the best spot, but like, we're going to work for it. We're going to work harder than you. And we don't care who's in front of us, and we're going to go at you no matter what. And that's kind of my mentality. That's our mentality when we're there. It didn't matter who we were playing. Didn't matter the score. We were going to swing, and if we were going down, we were going to go down and swing it. I mean, you know, Russ had a lot of different things he would say as far as, you know, want some, get some, and all this good stuff. But, you know, he knew what it was to be a Pirate. You know what I mean? He grew up. He'd always say that. I've been in your shoes. You haven't been in mine. And that was true. He had played there. He knew what it was like to be there. And like you said, I think the geography, the mascot, the whole chip on the shoulder, everything just fits in so well. And that's kind of what I had, you know, going through high school. And like you said, not getting any offers, really. And getting an opportunity there, I was like, all right, I'm going to make the most of it. And that was a lot of guys from that class, my class that came in. It was like, all right, you know what? We weren't given anything, but we're going to take it. And I think that's pretty much what Pirates are, right? You're not given anything. Yeah. You're going to go take it. That's what a Pirate is, and that's what we were. And I think at some point, this current group right now has to figure that out, that, hey, man, you're not going to be given anything. Yeah, we got a nice new stadium getting built up and some nice new facilities. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't have as much as the other guys. That's fine. We're going to go take it.
I wanted to ask you, I know, by the way, I'll give you a plug. I know you're going to be back with Troy and Jonathan on Pirate Radio on Mondays in the fall in season, and they do a great job at Pirate Radio. I wanted to ask you your thoughts currently on the team. I know that it's hard being, in fact, I call it, unfortunately, I know when you get mad at me, but I call it the Shane Carden curse. Because since you've left, man, it's been downhill. So I'm hoping we can find a way to get rid of the curse.
Yes. Don't throw the word curse out there. It's no curse. There's no curse. I mean, this is just part of it. And yeah, so I'll be on Pirate Radio every Monday at 5 with Troy, just breaking down game, kind of similar to last year. I like breaking down quarterback play. I've coached a good amount of youth quarterbacks and had some opportunities to work with some guys going to college. So I enjoy doing that. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, we got to figure it out. And if you look at, you know, the 2 years before we kind of got good, you know, we made the bowl game that first year and it was a new coaching staff. The next year we barely missed out. And like I said, a lot of the younger group was kind of fired up that we weren't getting the respect that, you know, we had heard we got when we first got in there. So I hope this younger group is fired up. I mean, they should be. I know the fans are, obviously. You know, we're hearing plenty from them, and that's fair. You know, that's what they have their pride and passion in. And, you know, a good fan core is going to be like that. When it's great, it's great. And when it's bad, you know, they're still going to be mad. I mean, that's just, those are fans. And, you know, I'd rather have a passionate fan group that's upset when we're bad than a fan group that's non-existent. And that's what, again, that's what Pirates are. That's what East Carolina is. And I'd rather have that.
Absolutely. I mean, when you another tough schedule, one of the games that's on the schedule this year that everybody knows about is North Carolina, the second game of the year. That's going to be a huge one. I want to talk about 2013 and 2014. I know when they come in this year, man, where the Tar Heels come to Greenville, they are going to be, speaking of a chip on their shoulder, after the video game numbers you put up on them in not only Chapel Hill but Greenville, the Pirates better be ready for them, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I'm sure they'll know plenty of kind of what happened the last two times we played, and I'm sure their coaches will make sure that's aware. And at the end of the day, though, I'm not sure how many guys were actually on that group that played each other. Obviously, yeah. the fan groups can remember that plenty, and I can remember that plenty, and I love the fact that my two last years. We put up 55 and then 70 against them. You know, the first time they apparently weren't ready. The second time, apparently they were ready. And they made that pretty clear before the game, and that's how they wanted to make UNC, you know, back on top. But, you know, I'll tell you what, man, those are two definitely games that I always get asked about. I always get told about how much it means. And
I mean, it means so much to me, that especially the first one. We went up there to Chapel Hill. We just lost to Virginia Tech, went up there, and I remember the whole newspaper staff at ECU had picked UNC. And that's the whole mentality of, all right, no one's with us, man. It doesn't matter what the other people say. You know, it doesn't matter what the media says right now for this group going into this school year. I mean, it doesn't matter. And nothing matters until what you put on film and what you do on the game field. And, you know, I hope these guys can figure it out and, you know, change it around this year.
Speaking of which, a couple more questions for you. I appreciate you spending some time with us here tonight, the Pirate Football Nostalgia Party. I wanted to ask you, what do you think is missing? Or going in now, I know it's the quote-unquote off-season. I hate that term because there's no off-season. But anyway, what do you think before the season starts, what are things that the Pirate players can do to turn this thing around?
You know, I truly believe that leadership gets made in the off season. You know, you find out who's going to all the workouts, you know, as a teammate, not the media, not, you know, the coaches know a little bit, but the players absolutely know who's kind of taking over and being a leader. And, you know, leaders don't get born in camp. They don't get bored during the season. They're born in the off season. They're born in 6 a.m. workouts, so no one wants to do anything. It's that guy who speaks up when things are hard. Everyone can be a leader when it's easy. When it's tough, it's hard to be a leader. I know you got a lot of guys probably on that program right now fired up to want to change this thing around. But it's the guys doing the extra 7-on-7 that are leading that, you know, the guys getting those extra guys into the weight room. I think that's the biggest thing in offseason what happens. And right now, I know, I really hope there's just some older guys. Hopefully the quarterbacks, I expect nothing less of the quarterbacks. It doesn't matter what depth you are at quarterback. And I know there's a competition going on right now. Those guys got to be hungry. Prove that they can be a leader. To prove that they can do everything and be the guy to lift when no one else wants to. I mean, that is perfect for right now to change this thing around.
I know. I wanted to ask you also. I know that you actually it's interesting. Two quick questions for you. First, I know that you hung up the cleats for the last time for Arena Football. I was kind of sad, but I know that that's reality as far as football. What brought you to that conclusion to hang up the cleats for one last time?
You know, there's a lot of factors in that. I finished the season with two back-to-back concussions within 7 days, and that was a scary moment there after that second game. And you know, I wasn't right for a little while. So I mean, that actually obviously had a big factor with everything we're learning about concussions. You know, a little bit of the stability of the league, of the AFL. We didn't have an agreement with the owners and the players until about a week before. And, you know, dealing with the concussions of the offseason, dealing with workers' comp from Baltimore, with everything that was going on with my injury, it was just a big mess, and it was getting frustrating. And I just really didn't want to go back into that. You know, just being up here in Idaho now, which, you know, a lot of people in East Coast, you know, it's not Iowa, it's Idaho, it's out west near Oregon. It's very mountainous, very beautiful. And just being up here and just living where I'm living and be able to help this community, their football program, you know, I was having a lot of fun doing it. And ultimately I made a decision to hang up the cleats, pick up a whistle, and I've been coaching up here for a little while now.
It's funny you say that because I remember there were many games I was watching you on the field and knowing that you're the captain of the team and knowing how big a position the quarterback position is on the field. And I said, man, you know, once this playing career of Shane's is over, he would be an awesome coach. I'd love to have you in purple and gold for sure. How does it feel now? I know you're coaching. Are you an offensive coordinator there at the high school?
I am. I'm the offensive coordinator, and it's going to be pretty similar to kind of what the ECU fans saw during those 12, 13, and 14 seasons.
That's amazing. And I know, are you going to, so I was going to ask you, are you going to do 100 up downs for the kids like Lincoln Riley did?
No, unfortunately, you can't do some of the stuff in high school that we had to do in college, just kind of part of it. But no, I mean, being coached by Ruff, being coached by Lincoln, you know, there's a lot of stuff that they instilled in me that I truly believe helps being a coach. I mean, the connection you get with your players from Ruff and being hard, but asking for perfection from Riley. I mean, it's just, they just had a good mix and, you know, and not to say Lincoln didn't connect with us and not to say that Ruff didn't, you know, ask for perfection. And he just had a good balance of both bringing it when it needed to be brought and understanding what the team needed at certain times. They were good. I mean, I always used to joke, it was for our staff, after a win,
you come in, they're more on edge, man. It was more like they were intense. They were, like, fired up. They didn't want to hear anyone bragging about last game. I mean, that 24-hour rule that Ruff used to talk about was real. And I love that. And there's a lot of other little things that I learned from those guys that is already helping me just in this offseason, helping this high school.
Well, I look forward to your coaching career. You had an outstanding player career at East Carolina, and certainly even in arena football. And I tell you what, you're always welcome in Greenville. I think you could win easily if you ever have a political career. That's my background, political science and broadcasting. You're doing great in broadcasting. But if you ever want to run for mayor of Greenville, I'll definitely be on your team.
I appreciate that. I'll ask Alan Thompson for a few tips for that.
Yeah, he definitely has that. I'll leave that to AT as far as the mayor stuff. He's definitely great. Shane, thank you so much for coming on tonight for the Pirate Football Nostalgia Party. It's something we're going to try to do annually and to honor the players, and you're certainly way up there on my list and many Pirate fans. And thank you so much for the great memories you gave us here at East Carolina in recent years.
I appreciate it, and I thank you guys, and I thank the fans for sharing those memories. I mean, it wouldn't be the same without 50,000 in that stadium. You know, it wouldn't be the same without going around Greenville and having people and kids and old-timers come up to me and just tell me about it. I mean, that's what truly made that place special, and that's what will continue to make that place special and continue to help this program get back is the people that support it and the people that are around it. So I appreciate it. I hope to be back there for at least one game this season, either during a bye week during our season or at the end of the year.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you, and definitely, again, you're always welcome in Greenville. Now, the Pirates, we'd love to have you for another 4 or 5 years in the uniform. I wish we could, but we can't, so... now we'll have you as coming back and getting the players fired up for sure. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Great interview with Shane Carden. Again, guys, he actually is on Mondays at 5 o'clock with Troy D with Pirate Radio Live. And we want to emphasize once again, this was recorded back in July. So he in season, he just does Pirate Radio. Again, that will be Monday at 5 o'clock, so make sure that we wanted to be very clear on that and fair to Shane and fair to Troy D because we're good friends and didn't want to upset the apple cart and be very clear that he didn't record that interview.
That was previously recorded in July. We were going to use it for the nostalgia party. We had some issues where we basically had too much content, not enough time. And we're using some of that content now. We thought it was appropriate with the quarterback situation. He had a huge game against Old Dominion in 2013. This is a recap of the Old Dominion game. We thought it was a good time to use it. And I'm sure the guys at Pirate Radio were saying everyone will mind. But just want to make it clear that that was previously recorded. And like David said, if you want to hear Shane, he's on Pirate Radio at 5 p.m. Every Monday during the season to talk about the weekend before.
All right, Bubba, I want to get to the stats. We've got a little bit of time, and we don't have a lot of time left, so let's get to the stats and give our thoughts, quick thoughts on Temple as well.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I think when you take a look at things, a couple of things I wanted to talk about earlier, guys, as far as just the game in general before I get to the stats, is just offensively, obviously, all three quarterbacks played yesterday, and it didn't take long for that to happen. It happened on the game's opening drive, and so we went from putting up, I guess, three touchdowns in our first four possessions to going a stretch from about the 10-minute of the second quarter to the 10-minute mark or so of the fourth quarter where we did very little offensively with the exception of the long touchdown run by Holton. So, obviously, in that stretch, Reed threw another interception. He was pulled, and I was very interested to see how he was going to respond. And
Lee's with the way he responded.
And boy, did he respond. That's what he obviously showed tremendous leadership and poise. He came into the game and led what should have been the game-tying drive when we had the PAT blocked and then led the game-winning drive when Jake Berry made the 38-yard field goal. So tremendous job by Reed of keeping his head up and doing what needed to be done to win the ball game. Obviously got a little interesting there at the end. I'm sure he would like to have the throwback, to say the least.
You know what? I want to talk about that. The interception, it wasn't an interception. When I was watching it live, I thought that ODU DB picked that ball off. And even in the watching replay of the scoreboard, I thought he picked the ball off. Watching it on ESPN3 several times late last night after I got home, I think it was the right call. I don't think he had to hit control of that ball with a foot in bounds when he intercepted it. I think it was the right call. I think it was incomplete pass. Just to be clear on that, and anybody who watched it, it was very close. But I do think the right call was made. It was incomplete pass, but I didn't like the play call there. I don't know why we were. But anyway, go
right.
Ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say I do think the officials got it right, and fortunately so, because obviously that would have been a game set match. But
yes, sir.
But yeah, as far as some of the other things that stood out offensively, now I'm certainly not speaking for anybody. This is just my opinion. But with the way we used Holton yesterday, when we pulled Reed from the game when he threw that second pick, now. I don't have a clue what the coaches feel toward Kingsley, but with Kingsley, he had obviously played on the game's opening drive. That I think that's probably just sending a message on where he is right now with the passing game as well, at least as far as where the coaches perceive him to be, because otherwise he'd have been in the ball game. But we had said time and again that those guys were playing in the roles they were playing for a reason, and I think the fans saw that yesterday. They saw why Reed needs to be in the game. They saw why Holton needs to be in the game, and they even saw Kingsley, the way he can run the Reed play. And
I don't understand why we put Kingsley in if we weren't going to use him more than we did. That was – he was
right.
Good in one or two plays he was in, and then you never saw him again. I thought that was goofy.
Yeah, when you were talking about Kyle, I wanted to say this, and I saw that too, noticed that, is that when you said earlier in the podcast about, and that's one of our recent criticisms, well, not recent, but consistent criticisms of the coaching staff, is please use your – you've got a lot – when you hear the people say we don't have talent, we've got a lot of talent on this team, guys, between what Ruffin had and then what Montgomery's – and we've been positive towards the recruiting of Montgomery – we've got a lot of talent on this team. It's like a piece of clay. I use that analogy all the time. One person can make, you know, definitely like different kind of pottery and different things like that and sculptures, whatever. And then you have a situation where a guy still has a piece of clay. So it's how you use the clay in this particular case. Player development is huge. And you've got and put them in a situation where you give them a chance to win the game. And, you know, the play calling and then use of personnel is still and player development is still key that we're looking at. That's what's in under our microscope right now, I think, on this podcast with this coaching staff is like it's like a chess match or pieces of it, you know, on a chessboard. Strategy is huge, and I'm just disappointed that, again, you have a kid like Kingsley and – not to say that's showing all three quarterbacks, but if you're trying to win games, if you use 10 quarterbacks, if you're trying to win games, then so be it, as long as you win the game. But I don't understand why Kingsley wasn't used more in the game. I'm glad you brought that up, Kyle.
But getting back to the statistics, on the offensive side, Pirates had 25 first downs, 38 rushes for 179 yards. Obviously, the big one was the 49-yard touchdown run by Holton, but then also a play or two prior, Anthony Scott had a 22-yard gain with Holton in the ball game. So, again, that's three straight games, guys, that the Pirates have topped 150 on the ground, I guess 220, 156, and now, like I just said, 179.
How many yards did Penix have?
And Darius Penix, he had 6 for 37. Hassan
Howell in a short yardage situation is a lot though.
Hassan Howell had 5 for 20, and Anthony Scott, like I said, had the 22-yarder and finished with 15 attempts for 62 yards. In the passing game, Reed's two interceptions have already been mentioned, but he finished the game 24 of 42 for 309 yards, three touchdowns, two interceptions, and
hey, Bob, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
When you were playing quarterback at Averett and in high school, is that something that's ever practiced, throwing a pick and then the offensive guys chasing down the guy and tackling him?
No, that's not. I mean, that's definitely not something you practice. But if
you should practice.
Well, I was going to say it's something you practice, but not intentionally practice. Not necessarily because, I mean, obviously at different points in practice, a quarterback's going to throw a pick. So when it happens, you better be giving chase and doing what you can do to make it happen.
I think I would practice it if I was a coach. I would tell my quarterback, and I would tell my quarterback to intentionally throw a pick. I would say intentionally, you know, even if the DB doesn't pick it off, it'll pick it off. But I would tell him, look, I want these next five plays, I want you to intentionally throw a pick. Don't let any of the rest of the team know. And I would do that consistently. And that because let me tell you something. Good God, Jesus! Somebody tackle when the quarterback throws a pick. Running backs, wide receivers, offensive linemen, tackle, wrap up. We could have, the returns after those picks, and there was guys that were just running beside the guy who picked it off. Hey, it's a race, it's a sprint. I mean, good God. Okay, I'm done.
All right, so.
getting back to the receiving side of things, and so you had Taj Deans, who obviously had what appeared like it was going to be the game-tying touchdown. And we had two or three receivers on that right side of the field there. So, to be honest with you, I don't know if Taj was the intended receiver or not, but a tremendous play that he made on the football for clearly the biggest of his five receptions for 48 yards. And then you had Trayvon Brown, 4 for 79. And, of course, he had the long touchdown, 46 yards, with about 5 minutes left in the first quarter. And then just prior to that, I'm pretty sure it was just on the same drive, the one-handed catch he made on ODU's sideline was tremendous. And if that catch was noticed around the nation, it was one that should have certainly been on the SportsCenter top 10. Okay. But and then I also, we've been talking about getting the ball in the hand of the running backs out of the backfield in the passing game, and we certainly did that with Penix yesterday. Maybe we can see it some more with Hassan Howell. And then we also got the ball to Anthony Scott two or three times on screen plays. But then moving on to the defensive side of things, now through four games, guys, we're giving up 25.5 points per game. We're giving up just over 300 total yards, right at 307.8 per game. Only 94.8 on the ground, and that's one of the things that really stood out about yesterday's game. We only surrendered, I think, 20 or 21 yards on the ground, and with that being the case, our defense was really able to pin its ears back, and we made ODU very one-dimensional, and Blake LaRussa was going to have to win that game. And he nearly did it, but they have some tremendous receivers. And all in all, I thought our pass defense was pretty good. We did give up the 49-yard touchdown pass there in the fourth quarter, but all in all, pass coverage was pretty good. You had Corey Sargent's big interception in the end zone. Yeah, the defense registered 9 sacks. Now that's 15 in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And
incredible. That is incredible.
11 sacks last year. And then 19 sacks the last 2 years combined. So that's just remarkable. You had Nate Harvey continually doing a good job, leads the team with 23 tackles, and then 11 TFLs, 6.5 sacks. Yesterday we also did a good job of playing red zone defense. We, of course, had given up some touchdowns in the red zone down at USF. And then yesterday we forced 2 field goals there in the first half, and that was obviously huge in allowing us to win a 2-point ball game.
Yeah, David Blackwell's incredible. The job he's doing with his defense and the buy-in from these guys on defense, and just that disruption with that defensive line is unbelievable. There's going to be some point in the season. By the way, that quarterback from ODU is a game manager and does not get rattled. Why he wasn't their strong quarterback from the first game of the year, I do not know. At some point this year, we're going to face a quarterback that gets rattled, that can't stand that pressure. And I got a feeling at some point in the year there's going to be a turnover festival coming. I don't know when it's going to be, but at some point in this year, you're going to, and Bubba, you probably agree with this, you've played the position, but there are certain quarterbacks that when they get pressure, they just start throwing the ball up in the air and a lot of picks happen. And I just got a feeling that's coming at some point. That with that pressure, there's going to be at some point a quarterback that throws it up, fumbles the ball, and we're going to have a turnover feast.
But basically what it comes down to, Kyle, is October, if you need that game, you definitely – you and I and Bubba have been talking about stealing one of these games. We have the Temple game next week. That would be great to have that turnover fest. That's a great road victory if we can do that against Temple.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. Yes,
the one that we think is susceptible. And how about if we could beat UCF at home? Oh, my God, that would be tearing down the goalpost if we could do that.
Oh, my God, if you beat UCF, that'll be national headlines. That'll be the story of the week in college football. Yes. If they're undefeated by the time they come in here, they may be knocking on the door of the top 10. I mean, I don't see that happening. But I do think at some point we're going to find a quarterback that, like I said, doesn't like all that pressure we're getting, and we're going to force a lot of turnovers. I'm surprised it hadn't happened yet, to be honest with you.
It's going to happen. I agree with you, Kyle. That's something that I've been thought about. Yesterday when they
keep Memphis in mind. Go ahead and circle Memphis. Just circle that now. I know the game's a ways away, but just keep that Memphis game in mind.
All right, guys. I want to mention, too, that a lot of huge things in 2019 that we have coming up. We're not going to tell now, but I want to, thanks to Bubba, he and I have been keeping up with the stats, and we actually have, this is the biggest month we've had so far in the history of this podcast. In the last couple months, we keep growing and growing and growing thanks to you. So I want to say personally thanks to everybody for that. And it just comes down to word of mouth. We're working really hard to get greater guests. And I want to thank Kyle and Bubba for – we've got a lot of great content. We have so much content and so little time, and we're trying really hard to – that's why, again, we played the Shane interview, because we had we're trying to get all these guests out and that. We got a huge event we're going to mention in a few weeks. We'll know more about then. And we've got a lot of great things, so thank you very much. And we got the on Thursday, by Thursday, we'll have our playback, our preview, right, Bubba?
We got the Temple preview coming, yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, the Temple preview, we'll be doing that, and it'll be a lot of great guests, as always. We have more great guests, and working really hard to put as many. We have Julie Torbett coming up, the volleyball coach, and also Jason Hamilton, the women's soccer team, and the volleyball coach. They're just doing great things. Our Olympic sports is really kicking booty this year and doing very, very well. So really proud of all of them. In addition to, we got basketball guys coming around the corner next month. They're going to be practicing here starting soon in the next few days. So we're really happy about that. So interesting stuff still ahead, and for sure. So anyway, we've been talking a long time, but thanks to the guys. Again, like us on Facebook. We've got a lot of people doing that. Twitter is just going out of control, so make sure that you do that. But anyway, that's at the Sports OBJ, and we have a Sports Objective as well. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum
Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.